My name is Renee Neho. I'm de Genio from the Mesa Grande Band of Mission Indians in Southern California. I'm based out of Denver, Colorado, and working on a game called Blood Quantum. I've been making games for about 6 years professionally. I love it, and I'm really excited about my next project. Blood Quantum is a love letter to my heritage and my family in a way that being, I think, a half-breed really resonates with me. It has to do with identity in fractions, how we view ourselves. In the United States, if you're Native American Indian and you're registered, you have a registered blood quantum amount. And you have an identification card that you carry with you that tells you what your blood quantum is. And it's a fraction of a number. It tells you how Indian are you. The original system was based off of a pretty racist and dark place, as a lot of these things do over history. But as governments changed and as we've changed as a country, we've adopted the system for Native infrastructure in our own government. Back in the old day, if you joined a clan, you were that clan. But then when we have colonization occurred and things, your blood lineage became more important. Now, a blood quantum used to be about how you'd identify property. I mean, Native American people weren't considered people back then. So they called it competency. They needed to measure your competency of whether or not you could work or be a citizen. And back then, that meant you couldn't be more than 25% Native American. So, yeah. Well, this was 300 years ago. You know, things have changed now, but we've still adopted the system that was designed for our extinction. And that's not really going anywhere. And now that we have other influences, things change. It's become a controversial issue among Native people as well. So I'm trying to make what I call an empathy simulator to teach a little bit more about how this affects how you perceive your identity and how you perceive your history and how you perceive yourself. Empathy is the key to rebuilding any relationship. Intergenerational trauma, systemic racism, only break bridges. They break human connection. And the only thing that fixes that is genuine empathy. The only way to achieve that is genuine vulnerability. So it's a very difficult journey, difficult thing to try to do, to really think about the things that hurt you the most and hurt you the deepest, and then expose them to another human being in hopes that they appreciate and accept it. You don't always get the response back of revealing things like that. It's like being the first to say, I love you. You're guaranteed that they'll say it back, but it's necessary to establish the connection, right? So I'd studied some of this with Brené Brown. She's a psychologist based out of Houston, I think, and she has really remarkable talks on the subject that really resonated well with me and how I wanted to move forward on my own design. When I first started Blood Quantum, it came from a place of I'm hurt and I want to explain why. I want to show people how this is how you're hurting me. Those conversations don't bode well when the othering has already occurred, when there's already a broken bridge. It's like we're yelling across canyons and you can only make out the worst of it. And it's only making the gap more. So I'm trying to reestablish that. And empathy is the main focus, and it has to be if I'm gonna have any hope for success in that way.
How can a game do that?
there have been a lot of attempts to. And I think, in my experience with Blood Quantum, is that you can only appeal to people's empathy. You can't explain it and you can't teach it. Everybody already has it. It's like telling somebody how to walk or how to breathe. But if you do it differently, you can only show how you do it. And that's what I'm trying to do, is display a myriad of emotions. In one of the most important things about game design specifically is that you have to focus on the emotional journey of the user or the player. And I am trying to replicate my emotional journey, and I want to do it in a small way and walk you with me in my story. As opposed to showing it to you, I want to guide you through it. I think that's how games uniquely can do that. They can make my story your story.
You use the word half-breed. That is an incredibly charged phrase. Can you tell me a little bit about your story and how this led you to this?
I personally hate the term half-breed. I don't really even consider myself that, but it's hard to explain that to some people because I am very fair-skinned. So when it comes out that I say, I don't say, hi, I'm half Native American. I don't say that. I say, yeah, I'm Native American. I'm from the Ganyo. I'm from here. But the looks on people's faces is very telling. Even the most well-meaning people, it usually comes off with a, really? Like, you don't look it. Suddenly, I'm finding myself needing to explain away why they don't understand. Because people have an idea of what a Native American is. People have an idea of what an indigenous person is. And most of the time, if they've already had an idea and I explain to them that I am that, I've got the wrong idea. So we're already off to a let's try to fix this immediately from the very beginning of most interactions. So it is something that has to come up, because when somebody asks me, you don't look Native, really, where are you from, where is that? Second, I start to say, well, my father is full-blooded Native American, my mother is, you know, Hispanic, French, Welsh, and Irish, and oh, that's why, there it is. So sometimes it's just easier to cut to the chase. But I don't personally identify myself as I'm a fraction of this or a fraction of that. But that was part of the emotional, shameful journey I had to take in discovering my identity. You're figuring out who you already are. You already are this thing. The identity is just the discovery of that thing. Finding the vocabulary to understand it, not define it your own.
So do you see your audience as Native people, non-Native, both?
Both, absolutely. I see my audience as people first. And we all hurt in similar ways, whatever corner of the planet you're from. The story of colonization isn't unique to the United States, which is one of the reasons why I thought that this could resonate with indigenous people all over, but also resonate with non-indigenous people, because you'll have the same emotional journey, even if it's on a fraction, as myself, if I do this right. That's an enormous amount of pressure I put on myself.
So have you developed other games?
I was also the lead artist on Everjane. It's a Jane Austen MMO.
Tell me what MMO means.
An MMO is a multi-mass online game, which means the game continues to play even when you're not in the world. So it always exists. It's always running in servers, and you hop in and enjoy the society at any time when you feel like it. WoW is probably the most obvious example of an MMO. The Jane Austen world, though, is a non-violent MMO where it's based on a class system where you try to level up in society as opposed to strength or fighting, as you do in most other games, role-playing games like that. Right now, it kind of feels more like a sandbox for people to play out their Jane Austen fantasies. That gets interesting, but that's some of the more professional work that I've done. I contributed to a game called Gravity Ghost a couple years ago, which is a radial platformer. What that means is you jump from platforms, sort of like Super Mario, only radial, meaning we jump from planet to planet, where the gravitational pull of the worlds affected your movement. That was more about feel and flow and had a beautiful story. Aaron Robinson was the original creator for that. I just contributed some art for it.
Talk about being a woman in the gaming world and a woman of color in the gaming world.
That is a thing, isn't it? Well, it becomes emotionally trying, I think, when it's so clear that there are some issues. And personally, I'm not demanding resolution on them before I can at least demand recognition that they occur. So at this point for myself and in my own career, all I really want to do is be the change I believe is already there. I want to say change, but it's not. Like, games, women in games and women of color are here. We're already here. We're here. I think we feel a little invisible in a lot of ways, but it's not really a change that we're making cool stuff. I think we just want a little recognition for it, right? I will go through waves, depending on maybe the political climate or, you know, the social climate or whatever's going on. And when I see people I know personally getting targeted, it's excruciating to me because I want to help. And if anything, I'd say being a woman of color in the games industry, you get really comfortable with a helplessness sort of feeling. I resent that a little bit, but I'm angry at no one specifically. I think it's just a system of much, or a symptom of a much bigger systemic problem. It's not one villain doing all of this. It seems like a lot of disgruntled people need to displace their discomfort on something. I think women, and especially women of color, are the easiest to do that to.
Have you been personally attacked or harassed?
Yeah, but thankfully, I'm not a big enough deal that that I remained any kind of target. My opinions are just that. They are just opinions. I won't be somebody who will be afraid to share them because I feel that they're genuine. And they're definitely not intended to antagonize or throw a grenade anywhere. I'm not trying to pick any fights. But it has occurred when things got pretty bad a couple of years ago. It was a little bit targeted, but I think once they realized they had bigger fish to fry, that's what happened, and they went after bigger women. That can be in itself a little discouraging. Like, why would you want to be successful if this is a thing that can happen to you if you do become well known in your industry for the work that you do? But I don't think that the message of the work that I'm making is an exclusionary one. I'm not saying we don't want men here. Of course not. I want the most people playing this game because I think more people will benefit from it that way. It's supposed to be a healing thing for all parties, not just indigenous people, or definitely not just women, you know?
You mentioned a lot of the, I think you said in the panel, or someone said, a lot of reasons people are making indigenous games is for medicine.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
It actually kind of dawned on me while we were at the panel, actually, that every game that I've experienced or that I've seen made by an indigenous person about indigenous content has pretty much been about some sort of healing in some way. Maybe specifically, even if it's non-indigenous people trying to do honor to indigenous folk, they're trying to right a wrong in some way. They're trying to, like, we're also kind of tired about the representation for you, and I think you have a lot more to offer. That can be a different topic, though. That's an entirely different topic, appreciation versus appropriation, and that can get kind of gray area, a lot of it. But Blood Quantum was definitely a personal healing journey for me, and when the more I talked about it and kind of showed it a little bit and discussed the design of it, the more it resonated with people from all walks of life, people from all colors, all gender identities, all sexual identities, and it wasn't exclusive to just indigenous people, even though that was maybe what sparked it. But that told me that I was touching on something that everyone can really relate to. And that, if anything, should be the most powerful reminder that we are all still connected. We just need to find those broken bridges, I think, and start repairing them. And I hope that this does that.
What's it like being at an all-Indigenous Comic-Con?
This is rad. I am so excited about this. What I really like about these sort of spaces is that something is pretty much universally understood. I don't have to explain away my heritage or become that sort of you're entitled to know more about me because there's maybe something you didn't understand about me until I said it sort of thing. That is completely lifted here. Nobody is looking at me and saying, what do you mean you're Native American? Where is that exactly? That's not happening. That whole dialogue that occurred before, it's just not. So what that means is that we all have kind of a mutual understanding. We're all here to create. We already know it. That's not the point. Now let's talk about the work. And that is really refreshing. So this needs to happen more. This needs to happen again. I think there need to be more of these inclusive spaces, not just for Indigenous people, but I think of a lot of people who feel that particular feeling when you have to suddenly explain this thing about a personal part of your identity to someone because they don't understand it. Having a space where you don't have to do that and you can get right to talking about the work, that needs to happen more.